Ladies and gentlemen, this is the Above the Bar podcast, a show about a middle-aged father, current events, and how these things affect my everyday life. Alrighty, folks, welcome to another episode of the Above the Bar podcast. We're bellowing up to the bar today. We've got a special guest. We got like real Hollywood with us today, not like fake Hollywood, like any of those kind of things, like legit done things in Hollywood. He is a director, writer, artist, producer. If I remember right, did some acting, drummer, maybe secret agent spy. We're not absolutely positive yet. Like the dude from the Gong Show back in the day who claimed to be a CIA agent. I think he's got it all taken care of. We have Mr. Neil DeMont. Is it DeMont or DeMonte?
It's actually DeMonte.
So we're going to go with DeMont, and it sounds better too. It sounds more fancy pants.
Yeah, it does.
Ooh, someone has their fancy pants on. So Neil's going to talk with us today about some Hollywood stuff, what we got to do, you know, maybe give us some behind the curtain, how movies are made, how these things happen. Before we do that, though, as we always have to do, we got to do a little bit of house cleaning here. As always, I'll throw this out to everyone, but over my right shoulder, we have sticker and a cause. We have the board up here. If you've got any kind of a cause, anything that you believe in, we always have our friends from the beard button. We've got that bearded sticker up there. If you have something that you believe in, something that you think is pretty important, send me a sticker. Send me the information on it. Maybe we can actually get Neil, if he's got any Clan of the Vein stickers, he'll send us a Clan of the Vein. We'll put that
up. Happy.
There we go. And we'll get everybody to check that one out. But at the same time, we also have to do our own little homework. Everybody get your phones out or device, whatever you're listening to us on, and make sure you're sitting down right now and you are sharing this to every single page you belong to, everything that you're involved in. The goal is always the same. All those yard sale sites that you're involved in, to see which one will ban you so that you're never allowed to come on there again. I always get some funny messages from people like, why is this on here? It has nothing to do with whatever. And I just tell you, it's entertainment, folks. Please don't take whatever you're into so seriously. Nobody else does. If I took everything too seriously, I don't know where I'd be. So make sure you take your time, enjoy these things. And we're going to get into it. And we're going to talk to Neil. You've got, like, I'm going to tell you right now, folks, Neil has so much going on. But the first thing we're going to talk about, who's Coco? Somebody named Coco already loves you, bro.
Oh, hi, Coco. Oh, that's my sister.
Hi. Oh, it's your sister.
Yeah.
Hi, sister. How are you? So before, and I wore this. My wife just got this for me. Can you see what it is? I don't know if you can tell.
Yeah, I love that. That was the first James Bond movie I saw in the theater, actually.
Right. And if I'm almost 95%, I told my buddy Keith this today, Lockjaw is the, I don't know if he's the only, but he's definitely the first James Bond villain to ever be in two movies.
Oh, you mean Jaws, the guy with the teeth?
Or Jaws, not Lockjaw, but Jaws. Yeah, he was in two movies.
Oh, yeah, we had the same agent, actually, up until he passed away.
And, you know, he was in Happy Gilmore, right?
Yeah, and he was also in the Kolchak the Night Stalker TV show, too. Yeah, he's a great guy.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, he always played the monsters.
See, and I know my Jeanette always likes to see what kind of shirts I have on. Wait till you see next week, Jeanette. And then we always got to see what's going on. My man, you'll have to tell everybody about this. But and I think it's kind of fitting. Neil Peart, Neil, you know, big Rush fan over here. He's going to tell us about all the things he's got going on. But before we really get into it, I want to say thank you for being here. Neil said I could talk about this. Neil had a pretty horrific car accident about a week or so ago. We almost missed this opportunity to speak to this man and his talent. So I'm glad you're here. Thank you to all the first responders that were on the scene, recognized the situation, got him where he needs to be. We tend to forget those folks. please, you know, take the time. And brother, I'm glad to see you, man. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, man, too. I appreciate it. Yeah, it was really rough for a while there. I have a concussion right now. So for anybody watching this, if you've noticed, I haven't been online much in the last couple, 2 weeks. I do have a concussion. My passenger, who's with me in the car too, she actually hit the front of the car. She's got a concussion as well. And we're both basically like supposed to be home on like bed rest right now. So that's why I haven't been going online or like going on watch. I can't watch TV, can't have chocolate. So just staying home and sleeping a lot, listening to podcasts and which like this, which is wonderful. And just catching up on some rest right now. But I'll be back on soon once I'm healed up. So I apologize for not being in touch, but that's what happened. That's why I haven't been online much.
So you got to have like a what do they call it? Like a media cleanse without meaning to have one?
Pretty much, yeah. Yeah, it was crazy. I'm just happy. Like, I got to tell you, everybody in that intersection, I can't believe how wonderful people are. Like, everybody stopped and made sure we're okay because I blacked out for a little while.
Really? And, like, you were out?
Yeah, like, I don't remember. There was, like, the small amount of time. I don't remember what happened after that accident. And I just remember coming to it. I was, like, looking at the windshield, seeing that we were facing the sky. I'm like, I remember being behind a gray car or something. And then I saw these people come over and tapping on the glass saying like, hey, you guys were in a really bad car accident. So we called 911 and they were putting bottles of water in the car. And I was like, what? And then I leaned over and I saw my friend and she flew out of the seatbelt. And like the seatbelt didn't work apparently. And it smacked the windshield up on the corner.
Oh, wow.
Was bleeding. And so I stayed with her in a comforter and I held the bottle to her head and helped it stop the bleeding until the paramedics got there. And so I'm really happy she's here too. I was really worried about her.
Yeah.
I mean, you always get another car, but you know, you can't get another friend.
Yeah. I'll put this up. Jonathan had us a piece of trivia here that Krubik's daughter designed Jaws' teeth, but more important, Jonathan also threw it up there. Jonathan, you're absolutely right. Real scary story, brother. And then super fan Jeanette. Well, Jeanette, sometimes you have to explain things to me. No chocolate. Is that a thing? I don't know. For concussions? Is that a thing for concussions? No chocolate?
Yeah, apparently so. Yeah, I was reading through all the paperwork, and it said you can't watch TV, can't look at screens, because you can actually get epilepsy when you have a concussion. I'm like, what? And it said, like, part of the thing, too, is you're not supposed to be doing reading, artwork, nothing visually stimulating. And on top of that, no chocolate, no sodas, and no coffee and caffeine. That's the part that hurt. So I was like, I can't have chocolate and caffeine.
So that was earlier when you were like, yeah, man, I'm going to be drinking decaffeinated coffee.
Like, yeah, that's what I'm drinking in this. It's like iced decaffeinated coffee, which is the strangest thing in the world to be drinking right now. But it tastes good. It's mushroom coffee made of mushrooms. But like, so not the – not the.
Does that, that make it shitty coffee? Since it was made out of mushrooms, does that make it shitty coffee?
I caught that. That's funny. But it's actually pretty good. It's mushrooms and Arabica beans.
I don't think there's any caffeine in my Heaven Hills, Kentucky bourbon. There's no caffeine in that, I don't think.
Oh, I wish I was still drinking. I would join you. But yeah,
I mean, I'm just going to throw that out there. So, I mean, I'm good. If I have a concussion, I'm fine.
Oh, yeah, you'll be great and very happy.
I'll be very relaxed. So kind of getting into this a little bit. And another thing, Neil took the sticker off of his camera so he could see us, so we could see him. But I was sharing your picture around, man. What movies or shows have you done? Because I showed your picture to a couple of friends, and I'm in the same boat. I was like, man, I know I've seen Neil and stuff. And I could have been I did scope your IMDb out a little bit. So what's some of the places people could find you?
Well, I was in a movie called Benraku with Josh Hartnett and Woody Harrelson and Ron Perlman. And I was the piano player in that. And I also was if you go on Tubi right now, there's a movie I did called Toolbox Murders 2 that my friend Dean directed. And I played the homeless guy who was the first kill in that one. And I had one line in Pirates of the Caribbean 2, which was Dead Man's Chest, I believe. And I was doing acting a lot more, and then I started segueing now into being a producer of it too. And I played drums in some bands and everything too. So that
people don't blow that shit off. Let's not blow off. I played drums in some bands. Mm-hmm. Who'd you tell me you played drums with? Like, '90s grunge kid. Like,
oh yeah, I played with my friend Peter DiStefano from Corner for Pyros, and I used to sub for the Smashing Pumpkins too when they first got started. Yeah,
bro.
So I jump on. So like it's a fun thing. So please excuse me if I'm a little bit slow right now, but like it's, you know, my head's a little fuzzy. But yeah, but it's
okay. Yeah. Like bro, like that's not like some bands. we're talking Porno for Pyros and Smashing Pumpkins. That's like 90s grunge royalty. The only thing missing is if you were like, yeah, Dave Grohl every so often, I'd be like, get out of the way, Dave. I'm just going to sit here with Nirvana for now.
I'm just kidding. That was a joke.
I'm going to say, oh, shit.
But I've met him before, though. He's a really nice guy.
He seems like the way nicest like musician you could ever meet. Yeah, like, he's on that Keanu Reeves level.
Yeah, just like a cool kind of hangout kind of guy, really friendly, talks a lot.
I know all about talking too much, but yeah, he's got that like real Keanu Reeves kind of vibe. Like, yeah, like, hey, I'm just like everybody else. No big deal.
Yeah, very likable. Like he doesn't have an attitude. Yeah.
See, I'm all about it. Now, you've got a bunch of other projects. Now, the biggest thing you've got out is, and it's a long title, but I like it, The Hitman's Wife's Bodyguard, number one movie out right now, number one movie in the world. You did all the storyboards for that.
Yeah.
With your friend who?
Patrick Hughes. He's the director.
Oh, so you know. My buddy, Patrick. Like,
well, I met him on the movie that we became friends, after. Oh, I should say during.
So now, for people that don't understand what a storyboard is, and I want to try to transition this to talking about something both of us like, which is comic books. What is a storyboard?
It's basically it's almost like a comic book, actually, but you show movement with it. And with comic book panels, like with a storyboard, basically, for anyone who's watching this, everything you see on TV or that you've seen like in a movie has been storyboarded out. So what that basically means is they hire somebody like me to work with the director, and you draw the whole movie out in little panels that show movement. So it's basically a big comic book. So that way, like the director works out, you kind of like work out the shots and how everything's going to play out in certain scenes. A lot of the time they storyboard action scenes and like fight scenes and things of that nature, because it gives everyone a view of how the movie's going to play out. So they'll work with me, and like, let's say they've got to do a big car chase, like in the Transformers, for example, they'll have like Optimus Prime's truck will be going down a street and people will be scattering. Then like he transforms into the robot and starts battling all the Decepticons. So like, and so the director would have to explain that to someone, and everybody on the crew is going to be like, what are you talking about? So like, they'll hire someone like me to sit there and break down all the camera shots and how, what the camera's going to catch for each moment of the action taking place. It's kind of done like a comic book. So like, you can see like from scene to scene to scene. So every time you see a camera change and cuts before it cuts back between two characters, like I'm the guy that draws a lot of those scenes. So that way, like they have a blueprint of the movie. So like the director can show that to the producers and the stunt people and the cast and like everyone working on the film and say, here's what we're going to do shot by shot. And then they'll go, okay, I can see this now visually how you're trying to put it together. So it's kind of like a visual representation, like a comic book that you draw out before the movie or the filming takes place. You have everything kind of pre-planned out.
Now, if you draw, so now say with a storyboard, and this, the storyboard thing is interesting to me because, like you said, it's a visual representation of what's going to happen here. But you explained something that I never thought about before. So say you draw it out, like who's explaining to you? Do you read the script and go, well, this is what I think it looks like, and you're going to draw it? Or does the director come to you and explain what he thinks or she thinks it's going to be like, and then you create that from there?
It's usually part two of that. Like the director will have a vision of what they want, and they'll say like, we have these complicated shots to do, and here's how I want to play it out. So I'll listen to them, and then I'll read the script, and we usually have a meeting after that. And I'll ask the director like, okay, what are some movies that you like? So if we're doing an action scene, and they say we've got like this cool like we want to have this handheld kind of thing, which basically means if the camera you're holding by hand, it kind of sort of shows the movement, almost like you're part of the action taking place. The other thing is like having a camera mounted, which means it's like mounted locked, and it's kind of like just tracking everybody like this, so it's really smooth moving. So I'll ask them what kind of things they like, and I'll ask them what kind of movies, name some movies you like that you want me to reference. And they'll give me a list of films. They'll say, okay, we like the action scenes in the movie Heat, and we like some of the action scenes in Die Hard. Yeah. And I'll go, okay, I know what you want. And like, I'll go, I usually have half of the stuff that they say I have here on DVD. And stuff. I'll go back and watch it and like, okay, I like how you want some of these handheld shots. You feel like the camera's becoming a character and moving with the people, like in Heat, like during the gunfights. But then in Die Hard, for all the big widescreen shots, you've got the explosions taking place and see people in the foreground. But then the camera will be kind of like locked, which means it's not moving, and you catch all the shots that way. So then you kind of mix and match where you draw stuff out. They might be like, okay, I don't like that, but do this. And then I'll draw some other stuff, and we'll kind of like, you know, they'll say whether they like it or not, they'll move on to the next scene from that point on.
So now how would that work? So you just made me think. So we know what the storyboard is, but how does that work in one of those movies where it's like, you know, they do those like long, super long shots that nothing ever changes, yeah. And it's – like, how the hell are you doing a storyboard for something like that?
That's what if it's a director who's like old, who's older and who's been more experienced, they'll just kind of block the whole thing out. If you have really good actors, which is like most of the time, that's what you need. You block the whole thing out and have them just play it, and then the director, you can have them rehearse it, and the director will kind of like watch them doing the scene, and they'll decide whether they want to move the camera, whether they want to get close or go back, and then what they do is But if it's like something super complicated too, and they want to plan it out, I'll do what's called keyframes, which means you'll say the scene. Let's say the scene takes place in a bar. You've got a couple people talking in a bar stool, and then some bad guys come in to rob the place. I know it seems like thieves are the topic of conversation today, but the director will say, okay, I want to have the camera starting at the bar with two guys having a funny conversation, like Quentin Tarantino style, talking about this funny stuff. The bartender yells at them. Then like the camera will slowly move over to somebody else. And like that person will be looking at them and eating something and kind of looking kind of shifty. And then like the camera will maybe move towards the door and then having like the bad guys coming in and robbing the place. So then we'll block each one of those scenes off little by little in shots.
Okay.
Underneath it saying, okay, in the shot, in the first part of the take, it starts here, and look, you just keep going, start, continue to each one of the boxes. So in this shot, where this has been covered with two guys at the bar talking, we'll cover that, and all these things happen here. Then the camera will go up to the bartender, and we'll get his, like, funny lines. Then the camera moves over to the shifty-looking guy eating the peanuts, going, and then you'll slowly move over to the background and zoom into the guys coming to the door. So you plan it, so it'll be, like, four separate camera shots to cover that whole big movement. And then at the very end, you write the little thing saying end, so you know the whole thing is covered in one big panning shot. And then you can, you know, just kind of space it out from that point on.
Your shifty guy eating peanuts sounded and looked like Popeye for a minute there.
Yeah, that was my dad. I'm just kidding.
unless I'm getting much more popular, like I hope I am, your buddy Adam is on here. Say hi to Adam Craig.
Hey, Adam. He's a very close friend of mine. Hey, Adam. How are you? He's also a filmmaker too and a writer, and he directs too. And he's an actor. Apparently he plays a really good drunk too, so we can use him in the bar scene.
So, I mean, Adam, you have just been cast as the shifty guy eating peanuts. Congratulations.
Apparently he plays a really good drunk one, I've been told.
I've been told that too, but it's for whole different reasons. Jeanette's got a great question, and this is something like I love – like, I don't know if I could ever be in front of a camera. Not that I'm scared of it. I've done public speaking. That doesn't bother me. I just don't know if I have that element to me. But she's got a great question. Have you ever been given direction from a director where you're like, what the hell is this person on? Like, did you like do it? Look, for those of you who couldn't see it, he is shaking his head. Tell me all about this. Is going to be great because your smile right now is like, yeah, I got one for you.
Oh, God, yeah. And like, I can't say the person's name, but a certain Oscar winner I worked with on a film. Keep in mind, Oscar winner. I guess this person had worked on very, very big movies, and he was doing a smaller film with us, but it was a good budget. And they wanted myself and the other artists, because it was myself and we had a lead storyboard artist, and then they brought in myself and three other guys to work on this film. And we were sitting there in the meeting room and like going through everything too. And I don't know if he had not done, if this director had not done a film or something before, but they wanted to draw every single scene out from like every time the camera goes from one person to the next person. And so we had to the storyboard pile must have been about that big. I do everything on paper. All the other guys were doing everything digitally. So like my contribution, of course, like felt like that thick. And like we had to draw every single shot out. And I'm thinking in the back of my head, like, okay, this person won an Oscar and has spent time on movie sets since I was a little kid. Why would you, shouldn't you kind of like know, like if you're going to like have a scene with two people talking in a room, that you have like a wide shot that shows the two people talking in the room, and then you film the whole thing that way, and then you do cutaways. So you do like your close-ups and your, you know, over the shoulder and like reaction shots, and it's maybe five or six shots tops to kind of cover that whole scene. You don't need to sit there and do like 87 shots for like every single time somebody. So, and then you have to write the dialogue in for every line that they say when the camera's
on. So that's on the storyboard too.
Yeah. But most people would just have you just kind of cover the basic thing saying, okay, like there's five shots, draw these five shots and write down the dialogue that covers it in each one of these, not having to draw 87 shots every single time the camera changes. That kind of shows a lack of confidence. So like that's, you know, bad.
See, now you got me thinking. So as a big giant comic book geek that I am, and everybody who listens knows I've got more books than I know what to do with. I'm very excited. Are you a Dune fan? John Hebert's book, Dune.
Yeah, I love the I've got some of their I've got some of the Bill Sienkiewicz comic book adaption of that actually from Marvel from when I was a kid, and I saw the 1984 one in the theater, and I saw the there was a Sci-Fi Channel.
They did all three books.
Yeah, and that was pretty good too. So like it's funny because when I saw the cast of the new movie, I'm really excited about the cast, but then I saw some of the visuals and it looked like it was filmed in Malibu. So it just doesn't look like it was filmed on another planet.
No, it's like it was filmed like in like a serious, like legit, like Mojave, Sudan, like legit desert, like desolate. Like I was following the whole thing. And what's wild about this one, and that's why comic books came up, is I just got the first 7 issues of the new Dune series, and it's called House Atreides. If you don't like Dune, I'm such a Dune junkie. Is that not like the greatest? I was that kid, but what I never knew when I was a kid is the movie Dune, that the 84 movie, which is actually the second movie made about Dune.
Right.
There's one before that never got finished.
The Giger one.
That's it. Look at you. Yeah. See, we're gonna geek out for a second, folks. If you're listening to this and you're like, the hell are these two fools talking about? It's Dune. It's the only thing I've ever owned on like VHS, DVD, digital, like everything. And it's one of those ones. It goes on my list. Like I have a couple of movies like Dune, Goonies, and Coal Miner's Daughter are 3 movies that I can watch at any point in time as soon as they come on TV. Guaranteed.
That's all good. Yeah.
Like they're just movies where it's like, yeah, I'm going to sit and I'm going to watch this shit. Have no doubt about it. But the reason I was going there with Dune is I was thinking about storyboards. So is there a mark, like when you're done with those, what happens to the storyboard?
Well, I do everything by hand. So a lot of times the director will just ask me for it. They want to keep it as a keepsake type thing. They ask me to sign it for them, they keep it. And a lot of people now do everything digitally on a drawing tablet. I just never wanted to teach myself to learn the tablet because it seems like I'm sure it's more convenient, obviously, because you can like wipe something away and like change things immediately. But then a lot of people that I work with want to keep the storyboards, and like if you do it on a tablet, they don't exist. And it's kind of like cool to me to kind of keep them. And like I worked on, like when I worked on Rambo 4, was it Rambo 4? What's the newest one? Last Blood?
I don't know. Like come on, keep going and tell us. Tell us about Rambo. Tell us about all these other great things you've done and fun things that all the rest of us are like, geek out some more. Let's do this.
No, I worked with Sylvester Stallone on the last Rambo film. Was it Last Blood, I think it was called? So, yeah, they had what he would do is he had this drawing pad on his desk, and like we got there, and he's like, he would just take this pen and just draw these big circles and X's and go like, I want the bad guys here, and Rambo comes over here and shoots somebody in the face, and then we move on. He tears it off and throws it on the floor. And like, so he kept there was a whole, by the end of the day, there was a big stack of them on the floor. I'm like, wow. So Sylvester Stallone's storyboards are on the floor. I'm just going to take them home. So I did. And like a lot of my friends are actually a big Stallone fan. So I would ask them, hey, are you a really big fan? And they're like, yeah. I'm like, you want some of this original artwork? I would just give it to them. And they never asked me for the actual original storyboards back. So I just kept some, and then I just kind of like, for anything that like, if for close friends of mine, like Stallone has a copy of some of mine too. I gave him some of the drawings that I did. But then if anybody like, oh, hey Nathan, if anybody wanted like one of the storyboards things, what I did was I gave them one of his drawings and then I gave them one of my drawings that accompanied that scene. And I said, here, this, so when you watch the movie, you can like look at it and go like, how the hell did you read this thing? And then like, a little bit more, you can kind of tell what's going on. You get to the final scene of the movie. Oh, okay. This rake comes out of the scene, sticks some guy in the face and cuts someone's face off. So yes,
I love it.
It was pretty cool. That was like a fun job too, because like, you know, it's fun working with him because he's so freaking, my God, he's like sharp like a laser. He knows exactly what he wants and he does not take the word no from anybody, like at all, which was really funny.
We were just talking about him the other day. So I like Stallone, and that's Rambo Last Blood, which has one of the coolest scenes is when they're in the tunnels underneath. Oh, that was so cool. Like, and he tells the dude, I'm going to rip your heart out. And then he does it. I'm like, spoiler alert. If you haven't seen the movie by now, it came out like 2 years ago. I don't like get over it, but, have you ever seen him in, and for some reason this comes up regularly, Sylvester Stallone in the original Death Race?
Yeah, when I was a kid. Didn't he have the car with the big horns on the front of it or something?
They were knives. They weren't horns. They were knives.
Oh, they were knives? Okay.
And the guy who designed those cars, if I remember right, was actually the same guy who designed like the Beverly Hillbillies and the Batmobile and a lot of the movie cars of that era. He's got a whole museum.
I don't know what. Yeah.
I'd have to look it up. He's got a whole museum. But yeah, he's like a legit. He passed away a couple years ago. He was on, like the last time I saw him, he was on, what the hell is that show with the Antique Roadshow? Or not Antique Roadshow. What the hell is the other one? Pickers.
Oh, that's okay. Yeah.
Yeah, that's the one. Picker. Somebody will correct me. Yes, Jeanette. He wasn't in Roadhouse. Baz Luhrmann's Strictly Ballroom and Cliffhanger are the movies I will stop. Oh, Roadhouse. I don't know what Baz Luhrmann's Strictly Ballroom. I don't know
I
that
I never
one.
Saw that one. Yeah, I saw the other ones.
Well, she's – so we love – we always got to talk about Jeanette when we have a moment. She actually is our international – she lives here in Albany with me, but she's international. She's originally from merry old England. And for some reason, I can't remember. And she's going to correct me. And for I normally get it right. I almost said Patagonia, but that's not where she grew up at. It's she'll put it up here in a minute and she'll correct me. But yeah, so she always is into like different movies or stuff that I've never seen. So going over some of your stuff. So you've got like – and we're talking about the storyboard piece because I wanted to kind of go through piece by piece what you've done. But you've also been – you're a producer with Sony's Robots of Awesome, which what is Robots of Awesome?
They used to be called the Media Cartel a couple of years ago. They did a bunch of movies. And then like I guess apparently the Jacob Silver, who's the guy that I work with, is the head producer over there. And we work with Brian Rogers, who's the Godzilla versus Kong producer, who's all the Godzilla films. So thank you. Yeah, we're all like Godzilla fans. So I guess they changed the name from Media Cartel because it sounds too much like a drug cartel type thing. So they changed the name to Robots of Awesome. And I was like, oh, cool. So Jacob and I met in Hawaii actually on a movie called Aloha Santa. So that was supposed to be starring George Lopez, and something happened where like one of the producers backed out. George Lopez decided not to do the film, and we were all stuck over there, basically having a 2-week vacation, which is what happened, which was cool. And then we came back here to the U.S. and everything. Then Jake and I just kind of stayed in touch, and then I invited him to. He wanted to meet Ryan Turek, who I kind of know a little bit, who's the director of development at Blumhouse Productions, who does all the big horror movies like Insidious and the Conjuring films. So he was supposed to be at a party.
We don't watch those movies. Oh, I look. So we had one of my guests a little while back was an independent filmmaker out in Montana. Like I'm big in Montana. It's a whole weird thing. I had three guests in a matter of like a month and a half that were all from Montana. I'm big in Montana. Oh, no, that's cool. It was just this odd thing, like a comedian, an independent director, and there's a whole nother one that I don't even know how to get into it. It's like lizard people run the government and afterlife, and it was a whole thing. But Yeah, like I don't even see. I lost my own train of thought because as soon as I start talking about that guy, it's like a whole nother thing. But horror movies, we got to talking about them, and I have my movies, and that's probably, you know, I want to get into this producer piece, but I can't watch horror movies that what would you call it? So you're probably the best person I could ask this question. So what do they call that, like in the movie business, where it's just like a scene and there is nothing going on except for like all of a sudden you have to really pay attention, like a curtain will move and you know there's nobody else in the room. Is there like a particular name for those in movies?
Like a jump scare, is that what you mean? Like where you're kind of like everything's really still, then all of a sudden something's just like done just to kind of frighten you really quick to kind of snap you and like that kind of
no thing. It's more like a fuck you scare. It's more that like
we learned the term today. Coin
that term. Know how like you have your curtains behind you right now? I know, mm-hmm. As far as I know, nobody else is in the apartment with you right now. If all of a sudden one of those curtains started moving, mm-hmm. and you were like, and I was like, Neil, your curtain's moving. What's going on back here? And you're like, there's nobody else here. And like that curtain's just like moving. Yeah, Insidious and Conjuring, they do that stuff in those movies all the time. Mm-hmm. I don't watch that. Mm-mm, not today, Satan. Not today.
Dude, I feel you, man. Like, yeah, in fact, I should show you something on my phone, actually. You mentioned it. My friend Pat and I, when the pandemic was really, before things were opening up, we were going on these late night walks to get some cardio in, like, you know, once or twice a week. We would literally start walking at like 11 o'clock at night, wouldn't get back till 5-6 in the morning. We just go everywhere. So I told him, hey, let's go from my place to this place called the Shakespeare Bridge, which is it's an old bridge that connects Los Feliz to Hollywood in the Los Feliz area. I guess it was some people from Disney built that bridge apparently back in the day so that when the Disney studios were closer there, the people can go back and forth to work. So underneath that bridge, there's a secret garden that only the neighborhood kind of knows about. So I told Pat, hey, let's go walk down to that garden because a long time ago when I used to work at a company called the Hollywood Beautification Team, we planted trees under there. So we said, okay, let's make an adventure out of it. So we go walking underneath there, and I'm going to show you the picture right now. So, you know, it's pitch black. So you like only really the residents know how to get down there. So you take the street, you go down in this hidden neighborhood, pitch freaking black. So this happened in February, and it's actually freaking me out telling you what happened. So we're going down there and it's a pretty quiet neighborhood. My friend Pat's like really loud. So he's like talking loud and like, I'm like, Jesus, tone it down. So about maybe 10 yards behind us, we saw somebody walking behind us holding a flashlight. So I assumed it was one of the neighbors, coming down really dark. And everything. And we started it gets deeper and deeper. It's pitch black now. And at the very end, you see this orange light at the very end where the secret garden is. Like, there's a street light that is aimed down, like just down under the light, where the park is. And the bridge kind of goes over it, which is really pretty. And it just kind of dead ends. So we go down, there's like a little cul-de-sac kind of area. There's nothing to do. There's like a little house on the left, a house on the right, some parked cars, and a small staircase on the house on the right. And you can hear footsteps, even if there's traffic on the bridge. And we get down there. And so Pat goes, oh my God, this is this beautiful secret garden. So I see like this person kind of coming up on the right. It was a blonde lady. She walked up and just kind of stood underneath the light and had her head down. So, you're looking at two guys look like thugs and like in a cul-de-sac late at night. So I talked loud. So I wouldn't want to alarm the lady because I don't want her to be like, okay, there's two jungle rapists over here in the freaking,
hell's a jungle rapist?
I have brain damage right now. Please bear with me. We're both look like thugs. So I said, hey, like we planted this garden. Let's go take a look at the plaque and see if our names are on it. And I looked over at her really quickly, and she was just standing under the light with her, like, if you're me, she was like this, with her head down, she had blonde hair and was wearing a hoodie. And something looked kind of weird, like she was really bright. So we walked past, I thought it was like the person was walking behind us who kind of caught up to us at the light. And we walked about not even 5 feet, and I turned to look, and she was gone. So Pat was like, hey, where'd that lady go? We looked around. There's no way we would have not heard her walking away. And the steps from the house were too far to get to and everything. So I was thinking about it. And so my friend Pat talks a lot. We turned around to leave. We're walking up. He didn't say a freaking word. In the entire 7+ years I've known him, he never has a loss of anything to say. He'll always start a conversation. So we're walking up and I saw his face getting kind of pale. I was getting kind of pale. And I was like, hey, Pat, And he was like, yeah. I'm like, did you think we just, and he goes, I was waiting for you to say something. And we just like hauled ass out of there. And this was around like 10:30 on a Friday night. So like we're walking back once the subject came up and I got the chills. And I told him, Pat, you know, when I looked at that lady, she didn't acknowledge us, but I just thought it was the person who was behind us who caught up to us and like stopped at the light. We're just standing there looking down. But I remember looking up and like, yeah, we took some videos and everything too, and nothing came up on our cameras. And from the angle where the bridge is, if somebody were to jump, that's roughly about where you would land if you would hit the ground. The funny thing is, you know, like when you look at someone talking who's in your view and you can see them from the waist up. I don't recall seeing her from the waist down. It's almost like my brain filled in the gaps. Because I remember her being really brightly lit and really just like colorful, but like up to about here. And I don't remember seeing legs. So I told Pat that. He goes, yeah, I think I recall that too. So we were like scared to death. And like this past weekend, my friend, you know, I was getting tired of being at home sleeping the whole time. So my friend said, let's go grab something to eat. I said, okay, I'll go with you. And I told him, he said, hey, is there any place we can go to that's on the way back to your place we can stop off? I'm like, well, you know, there's the secret garden. And we went down there and I showed him where we saw the ghost, and he was taking videos and everything too. I don't think he put them on his computer to examine them just yet, but he did say he felt like we were being watched. And I was like, yeah, it just felt weird. There was like no, it was just like dead air in that space. It's this really pretty little hidden garden at the bottom of this thing. In fact,
look, I know you know Patty and I know Patty. This sounds like a Patty situation.
Yeah, Patty Negri. I'm sorry, go ahead, please.
No, I was just going to say, this sounds like a Patty situation. We need to go ahead and get her involved in this.
Yeah, this like, is see this picture. I don't know if you can see this.
Go the other direction. No, other way. Yep. Oh, there we go. Okay. So that's where it was at. Look, that's a creepy looking ass spot to start with, folks. What it is there's a tree in the way and the light's kind of peering through it. And it's at the end with like a sign, and then it just goes off into oblivion, a little bit of a sand and then up a hill. Somebody died there.
Yeah, she was right by that car that you see, like where the light post is. She was standing right beneath that. And we were like, but see what I mean? It's like, we're like right. We just walked over to that sign on the left.
Yeah.
And it's not even a 5 or 10 foot walk, and like it's about a 10 foot walk, and like she was gone, she just vanished, and there's nothing in that area that we could really see from that. So,
yep, nope.
Yeah, but Patty is someone I would definitely want to go down the woods and see if she feels anything, because I was so freaking scared. Like I was like in the cartoons where they do like
nails all over the place. Absolutely. Yeah, I was
scared to go back there.
So, do you have any? Like, have you produced any? So, as we completely make a left turn back into where we were talking about, folks, because we just, this is what's so great about it, because it's my show. I don't give a shit.
exactly.
So, with Robots of Awesome, have you produced anything over there yet?
Well, they've done movies under the banner of the Media Cartel. So, I just joined them about a year and a half ago. Right now, we have one film going that my friend Ethan is doing. And we have another one that my friend Damien's going to be doing too.
Anything so you can talk about what Ethan's doing? Can we talk about Ethan's deal?
Well, Ethan is the co-director of Machete. So he co-directed Machete with Robert Rodriguez.
What?
So Ethan brought us a script that he wrote that we really liked. And he co-wrote with a guy named Alex Wraith. And it's an MMA fighting movie. And I can't really say about it, but like we're already, that movie, the money's in the bank for that thing too. We're getting ready to start filming that one. We're trying to get locations locked right now. And the other movie, my friend Damien's going to probably be doing right now. We're actually just going through all the paperwork now with now legal to make sure everybody's going to get what they're supposed to be getting. And we're almost about to sign that one too. And we're looking for two other films that we're going to be doing too. So I'm trying to right now get some director friends of mine to come on and produce those. Well, not produce, but to direct those two films, but with a bigger budget. So we're just interviewing directors right now.
So I guess I never even thought that was a thing, interviewing directors. I guess, you know, you think about the big ones that are out there, the Spielbergs, Gunn, and all those guys. You just kind of think like they just show up and they're like, this is the project I'm going to be doing. And then they just go from there. I guess it never dawned on me. But now you've directed a movie, though, and I'm going to tell everyone right now. It's called Jingle Trails. It's on Amazon Prime. It's 99 cents. Get up off your cheap asses and go rent it. It's about 20-some minutes long, 22 minutes long, something along those lines. The wife and I sat down a couple of days ago because I was going through. Neil sent me a bunch of cool stuff. Look up what he's done. He was bragging. And he sent me this stuff. And I was like, well, let's check this out. I'm going to tell you right now, I haven't got a chance to do it with the kids yet, but it is absolutely, if you've got a kid somewhere between the ages of, I'd say 11 to 12 or younger, it is such a great Christmas theme about these two boys out on a hike. And they run into Santa Claus and he's trying to just have him a little break away from the North Pole and the chill. And these kids start talking about how to modernize his world. And it just goes from there. It is phenomenal. It is fun. But it's 22 minutes. And what had me curious watching that is, well, how long does it take to make a 22-minute movie?
Well, it took us about 3 days to shoot that. Okay. And so what we did was, that's what, like in the film business, we call it a short film. But we have it up on Amazon Prime. It's been streaming. It's been doing pretty well. And thank you. It was the first time I did a children's project, which is cool because my camera keeps going on. It was cool because it was the first time I had done anything involving like a children's themed thing. It's always like, I usually do things with, like, you know, boobs and blood. So, you know what I do, and gunfire. I was approached by Lisa, the producer, Lisa Malcolm, to direct the film. I'm like, yeah, I'd love to do it.
Is that our Lisa?
Yeah, Lisa Malcolm.
Our Lisa that introduced us.
Yes. Yes, that's right.
Okay. I didn't know she did producing also.
Yeah, she produced the film. And
she's such a sweetheart.
She's very nice. My God. Everybody in that whole crew is awesome. But yeah, my friend Lindsay is we were thinking about filming it on a hiking trail. I'm like, well, let me try to reach out to my friend Lindsay. So Lindsay's an actual like location scout for like big movies and everything. So she got us like this thing called the Rock Pool in Malibu, in Malibu State Park. That's where they filmed the very first episode of The Incredible Hulk, the pilot from the 1970s one with Bill Bixby and everybody, Lou Ferrigno.
Yes.
It's beautiful. Yeah, people climbed that big rock wall over there too. So we filmed like deep down in there. So we did like each location per day. And it was like, it was like 100 and something degrees every day we were filming there. So the heat was the only thing that was the problem really. But we had to kind of get to a certain point with our cars and then take everything down there on like trolley carts to get down there to go film it, because you can only get there by walking. So it was a little difficult to film down there, but it was so beautiful. And like, it was so scenic and just so clean. And we had a forest ranger with us too, who was like, kind of like, he would stop the traffic because like, it's a public park. So you can't stop people from going there to have fun. So all he could do was stop them. We'd film, they said, okay, let's, and like people who were like sunbathing, all the people with their rafts and everything would start walking through to go jump in the water. So we couldn't like stop them from doing that. But it was pretty fun. We had a good time doing it, and everyone was really cool. And I got to work with good friends of mine, so it was a no-win situation. Sorry, a winning, all-around winning situation.
Now, how do you get it up on Amazon though? Like, I have a buddy of mine, Dave. Dave is in the movies around the local area. I have another buddy who's got his SAG and all the other stuff. But how do you make a movie and actually get it onto something like Amazon?
I'm not too sure how they did it, but it's got to be in a special format. It's got to be in this format called, I think it's called like a mezzanine file or something. It's got to be in this very special format. And like, I know so many people, and only one person I know knew how to do that. And after I reached out to them, I'm like, you know how to do that? Yeah, I don't know. Like, apparently it's like nobody knows how to do it.
Just download a program and just be like, convert it.
That's what I thought. Yeah. But like, apparently I don't know anything. So I luckily kept asking around. Like, I've got this friend named Vikram, who you should all know, Vikram Kale, really sweet guy. He knows a lot of stuff. So yeah, I just said, you know how to do this thing? He goes, yeah, I can do that. I'm like, what? I was completely shocked.
Don't we all have that one friend where you're like, bro, I need somebody. Oh, but dude, I've done that like 15 times. Like, just give it to me. I got it. No big deal. And that's always the same guy where you're like, well, how much do you need? He's like, dude, do you understand it's going to take me 3 minutes to do this? But when you talk to somebody else, they're like, this is going to take about 6 months to get done. I'm going to need about $7,000. And then, but we all have that one friend. It's like, give me like 3 minutes. I'll do it for you. And just, I'll email it over. I love having buddies like that. So now the other big project, because I've told you before, Salt was filmed in, yep. So this is my son. Salt was filmed in Albany. What does it take to shut down portions of a city and highway to film? Like, so you just shut down a walkway. And we've actually got the movie Painter with, God, I can't think of his name right now. He's one of the, not a Baldwin. Who's the all right, all right, all right now guy? Doggone, all right, all right, all right. You know who I'm talking about.
Matthew McConaughey?
Yeah. So what's the other brother's name? Owen Wilson. Owen Wilson. Owen Wilson is in the Albany area right now where we're at filming the movie Painter. And so is Harrison Ford doing some. Yeah, it wasn't Matthew McConaughey. I got it wrong, Jeanette. But it's Owen Wilson is here filming Painter and parts of Indiana. The new Indiana Jones movie is also being filmed here with Harrison Ford. And Salt was filmed here. That's what my son's talking about. Salt was filmed here because we have actual cobblestone streets. My wife was telling me about a movie they filmed here where they actually tore up the street to get to the cobblestone, and it also had trolley tracks under it because that's what they wanted. And then where I live on the other side of the Hudson River. So you're missing out. Everybody thinks it's in Hollywood. It's not. It's over here on the right coast where we have seasons and shit. We're going to talk about Chicago in a minute. We're going to talk pizza maybe. And I'm going to blow your mind where the best slice of pizza is. But here, over here in Troy where I live, we're actually filming an entire HBO Victorian series.
No way.
Yeah, bro, I'm telling you, this area is like monster. Because all of them, all these actors and actresses live in Hudson, New York. There you go. Jeanette just put it up. Ironweed and the Gilded Age is in Troy.
Oh, cool. Thank you. Thanks, Jeanette. I'm going to look that up.
That one, and then my boy Tom, Kingston, New York has a lot of popular filming spots. Because you're on the Hudson River. All those train movies where, like, someone is dying on a train, those are up and down the Hudson. We used to see Spike Lee. So I used to – my old life, I was on trains. I'm just throwing this out there. What I'm trying to do, folks, I'm trying to get Neil to come to this side of the world. You know, he went from the middle, and then he was out on the West Coast. But he's from Chicago. I mean, we'll keep you – I mean, you'll be safe. Nobody's from Chicago, though, Neil. You know that, right?
Well, I am. I'm like the only person I know that's actually from the actual city out of all the people that I know who are, yeah, they're all from the suburbs, but like you ask them where you're from, they're like from Libertyville. Like, that's not Chicago. That's 708 area code and 847 area codes. I'm like, I'm from 312, man. So like,
That's so great. You know it. You are legitimately Chicago. 20 years in the Marine Corps, I would ask guys like, where are you from? Chicago? I'd be like, oh, really? What part of Chicago? They'd be like, 2 hours south. I'm like, that's Gary, Indiana.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, that's not, yeah, it's not the same.
That's not, and they'd be like, well, if I told you where I was from, you wouldn't know it anyway. I'm like, okay, fair enough. but yeah, bro. So what is that? You know, that's a legit question for my son. You've done a lot of movies. You've been on a lot of movie scenes. What is the coordination that it takes to shut down a city to do those kind of things?
It costs a lot of money. You have to get permits. So like what they'll do is they've got to go to the film commission. Like every city's got a film commission. You've got to go there and get permits, which cost a lot of money. And then if they have to, like, you know, like let's say, for example, like shut down a neighborhood, they have to put like signs up all over the place too, saying we're going to be filming here at this point in time. If we hear gunfire going off, it's just a movie. And they really go off a blank. I'm just kidding. So, but they, so yeah, they put these signs up there too. And everybody has to kind of stay away. And like you can't park on the street. They have like, they'll tow your car. And they have like movie cops who sit on the motorcycles who kind of like watch everything and just kind of hang out. And they're like, you know, they have all the big white trucks and the big white vans with all the gaffy equipment and like camera equipment and like rigging equipment will all be sitting there. And yeah, then they'll get a location that, so when you get the location you're going to film at, you've got to get permits that whole area to let people know you're filming over there. And then there's the way, you know, to do the low budget version. Like I keep doing this a lot, like that girl in saying.
You're quoting a lot. I mean, it's okay.
So yeah, I'm gonna sit on my hands. I have to stop doing that. I just watched Say Anything the other night. The girl kept doing their hands the whole time. Now I'm starting to do it. But the so like they have there's a term for it, like guerrilla filmmaking, which means you kind of hide in the car and wait till the cops go by, and when there's nobody out there, go, let's go film, and just go up there and like light it really quick, and then go there and film it by hand, and pray to God you don't get stopped by the police. Then you got to lie and say you're doing a student film, or say you're making a wedding video, which I've done. The wedding video one actually, yeah, for all of you people out there, filmmakers, saying the student film thing, it's, you know, you'll still get ticketed. If you lie and say you're doing a wedding video and say you're making, like, oh yeah, this, my friend over here is too freaking scared to ask his girlfriend to marry him. What are these really creative things? We're filming this funny video. We're going to have it playing in a theater. And then when we show the video, he's going to walk up and surprise her and, like, surprise her with a ring. And the cops will actually send something, oh, we'll help you. And you're like, what? Okay. And yeah, it totally works. If they're filming a wedding video, and it, yeah, it totally works all the time.
You've all learned the secret. It's all about faking it and making it sound like a wedding video. Yep. That is
lies
so great.
Keep relationship together.
It's only alive until someone finds out.
Yeah.
So now, exactly. Now you've got some other projects. So we know you've done some. We're moving down the line here of all of the pieces. Mm-hmm. I'm surprised Tom, that's Cujo Halstead here, hasn't hit me up with some kind of drummer question, because he knows I like drumming. I like drummers. Mm-hmm. Where you said you were a Neil Peart guy. I'm John Bonham all day long.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think John Bonham, if you pull up some of those old school Led Zeppelin, him just rocking out like a monster. And I always remember a story I saw on TV, like a VH1 Behind the Music, where they said he played the drums so loud they could put the recording equipment in the hallway because he was too loud for it. Almost like and the other one to me is Keith Moon. That's another one.
I love him. Yeah.
But I think they all, like the Keith, to me, like, because Neil Peart would be after Keith Moon and John Bonham. Right? Am I doing my math right?
I thought it was Keith Moon first, then John Bonham, then, because like didn't Led Zeppelin come out like in like late 60s and Keith Moon was doing like the mid 60s? I don't remember.
I don't know. Like, we'll get corrected here. Who's Tim Peart? Alexander? Help me out, because he said Tim Alexander.
That one I don't know. I'll have to look that one up. God, must be
see, really Tom, weird. You're nobody. I don't. No one knows Tim Alexander. See, he's into like thrasher death metal and all that.
Oh, well, they're all good too.
And Tom actually used to play in a Nine Inch Nails cover band that actually was like a legit made money cover band. Not like, so guys, I'm in a cover band. We do all Nine Inch Nail stuff. No, like he actually can play and do stuff, and he knows it drives me nuts.
He's good.
Okay. Les cool, Claypool. I love Les Claypool. Like, we can talk about music. I can't play the radio, though. Like, I have 0.0 talent. What I'm doing right now is my talent, but I love me. Some Les Claypool. No better bass player I have ever heard than Les Claypool. He's just, you know, I just love him. He's amazing. But so you've got all this music background, and I love all that. But you got a little, you know, this art thing and these boards and the directing and all that. You got a little something else in there too, don't you?
Which thing?
Clan of the.
Oh, my comic book. Yeah.
Give me the comic book.
I'm doing that with my partner Neo Edmund, and we have like this. I can show you. This is the preview issue that we did originally, and here's some of the artwork on the inside. That's actually my favorite page. Is that showing up okay here?
Yes. And folks, this was actually the cover we posted on our Instagram. Was that cover for Clan of the Vane? If you know me, I love comic books. So. Now, Clan of the Vane, what's our premise here?
It's basically Die Hard with vampires. So we have a vampire character that's unique. It's a unique thing we're doing with it. And it's a character who basically he was originally a painter. And what happened was he wound up getting challenged by his family. He couldn't save his wife from an event where she was getting attacked. I felt really bad because he was a painter and he's kind of very wimpy. What happened was through a weird turn of events, he winds up becoming a vampire and then winds up like slaughtering all these people in his village and then realizes what he had done. And he winds up getting his wife killed. And he has no memory of this whole incident even happening. So he winds up becoming this really tortured vampire killer and goes around and starts hunting down different species of vampires across like the world and ridding them. And what happens is you realize later on he didn't actually destroy all of them. So a small clique of them still remained, performing a coup to get him. And it's a really, it all takes place in this big glass resort in like the basin of the Russian mountains. And that's where it all becomes a big climax. So what we did was we did this preview issue. And when we did the preview issue, I was working on a movie called Cooties with Elijah Wood's company, Spectre Vision. So we got the comic book actually featured in the movie Cooties, and Elijah Wood's bedroom was a big Clan of the Vane poster on there, and got some of the artwork up on the walls.
Nice.
So, and then we also got it featured on season 5 and season 6 on the Teen Wolf TV show on MTV. So the cast members and the makeup artists on that show, it became a touch as they were. So like a lot of the Clan of the Vane artwork was actually in Styles' bedroom, who's one of the characters on Teen Wolf. So we got a lot of the fan base from that watching or getting our book and everything too. So we only had enough money to do a preview issue, but now that I've got some money coming in from some of the producer stuff that I'm doing, I'm actually like getting the rest of the book done. So we'll have like a 24-page preview issue that takes place before the big movie takes place. So we were pimping out so Neil wrote this really awesome script. I was basically consulting on it, and script was awesome, but it's going to cost too much money. So a lot of producers said, we love this idea. So if you guys can just base it off of a finished graphic novel where you have like 7 bad guys, 3 good guys and a monster, we could do that. So I said, okay, great. I just became a producer about a year and a half ago. So here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to pay and get the book done. And then we can probably put some supplemental stuff in there to show some backstory. Then we'll have a whole finished graphic novel that we can use to say, here's what we want to do with the movie. Then we can start working on a script for the smaller budgeted version of the film. So we kind of, if you follow the Chronicles of Riddick movie.
Yes, absolutely.
So we were starting off with the Chronicles of Riddick version, but not the Pitch Black version. So they said, we need the Pitch Black one. Give us a good $5 million film we could do for a smaller budget. And we if that does well and we get a good response, we'll do the big one. Okay, we'll put that together right now. So I've been
busy. This is going to be a film.
Hopefully, if everything goes good, yeah, we're really working hard to get it done.
Okay, so I'm going to whore myself out for a moment. If it becomes a film, and as we announce it to all my people right now, I just want to be on a red carpet one day. Just a red carpet moment. Like, just some asshole walking down when they're all like, hey, picture, picture. And then they're like, I have no idea who this guy is. And I'm like, that's right, the Above the Bar podcast. So I'm going to pimp myself out right now for a moment.
There you go. And you'll be very welcome to do that.
But isn't that what Hollywood really is? Just pimping yourself out every moment you get a chance.
Yeah, we're all whores. Let's face it. I'm a whore babbling myself. So.
I love it. So now the graphic novel, because I'm a big, like I said, big comic book guy. Is this something that you guys approached? Have you guys approached Diamond about distribution or anything?
No, there's a big falling out going on right now with Diamond, so we're kind of staying away from that whole thing. But what you could do with the comic book, you can order it on the website, which is www.clanofthevane.com. There's a link on there you can order. We have a print-on-demand thing set up with a company called Kablam, which did they advertise? Oh, they did advertise it. It's on the back of the cover.
So we can go to clanofthevane, VEIN.com, and Kablam will – I click on it. I can order it. What's it cost me for a book?
I think it's like $1.99 or something. It's not that
Come on now, you cheap asses. $1.99. Go get you a comic book. I'm going to go get me one because I need a copy. I got to have a copy.
I'll sign for
it. Even better. Look at that. Neil will sign. No, I'm not going to say that. I'm going to spell it. Neil will sign every single copy that we send to him. No, but we'll get it. Yes. If you send a self-addressed stamped envelope and a quarter taped to the outside of it, Neil will sign every single copy of it. But you must have a bicentennial quarter taped to the outside of it with the tail side out for him to sign.
For 5 rubles.
Listen here. We take rubles, we put on outside of envelope, we send. It's a beautiful thing.
That's right. You get Pasnian Warlord with that too. Not bad. Not bad deal.
Not bad. Don't worry about this. It's all good. We like this. Dude, like this is, I'm really digging. I love the fact that like you're not one of these guys that are a one trick pony. You knew what you wanted to be into. We were talking earlier, and we really didn't even touch on this. And we're gonna get ready to kind of tie things up here. We didn't even touch it. You started off meeting all these people as just a driver, like driving for like musicians.
Yeah, well, for that particular thing, yeah. My friend Kat actually got me the job. And my friend Tammy, who I'm still friends with, they work for the transportation department. So they got people that knew the Chicago area pretty well to like just drive everybody. And when you're driving people for 2.5 hours in each direction, going to the airport, being stuck in traffic, you just become friends after time. And I'm pretty friendly. So I'm not threatening anyway. They give you the business cards, exchange phone numbers. And when we had the actor and writer strike at that point in time, I didn't have any money coming in. I'm like, what am I going to do? I have to work, it's going to be bad. And I called some friends of mine that I met up with and when I was doing Wild Blues. Like, hey, we need some drummers to come film. Can you play drums? I'm like, yeah, I just haven't played in a long time. So I had to start practicing, get my skill level back up. I started filling in for people and subbing, and that's how I got back into it. But yeah, a lot of it's just being friendly. Just, if you're just cool with people and not that you don't want anything from anybody and don't hound them all the time, you'll make friends. You just have to kind of, I've noticed friends in this business and entertainment, they always take care of each other. I've never had a problem with anybody, especially with the horror film business. My God, if somebody's doing something, everybody from that whole genre comes together and pimps out their stuff, helps them celebrate it, gets the word out. It's a wonderful place to be.
Well, that's a very niche movie market.
Yeah. It's now, a family, really.
I know we're all over the place today, and you brought back up to horror movies. Mm-hmm. George R. Romero is the greatest horror movie director, anything. Look at this. So, I don't even know how to say it. That's my buddy Anthony. I don't even know. That's Anthony. Anthony has a death metal band also. Mm-hmm. I have all these death metal friends. I don't even listen to death metal music.
I love death metal. Oh my God.
Before we started, I told you, man, I was listening to Counting Crows before this. Mm-hmm. And earlier I listened to one of my favorite newer artists is a guy named Tyler Childers. I love Tyler Childers. And I don't even like country music. Oh, bro. Tyler Childers, does this music where you're like, this shit's kind of bluegrassy, but kind of not. It's almost his I can't even think of his name right now. His producer is actually I'm gonna try to think about it, but absolutely my man right there, death metal, and he's good too, man. I've listened to him. I can't get that grumble. Can you do that grumble?
That one, you mean?
Holy shit, you sounded like a robot for just a second.
Oh, really? Well, I have the air conditioner on, some of the death metal guys, it's and you're like, what? Who's the guy? Yeah, there's a band called, Suffocation, I think, that's from your area, from Albany or something. I think, if I'm not mistaken. Maybe someone can fill me in on that. Yeah, because the drummer of that band knows my friend Kelly, who lives in North Carolina.
Love North Carolina. Sturgill Simpson is Tyler Childers. You know who Sturgill Simpson is?
Yeah.
So that's who produces a lot of Tyler Childers' music is Sturgill Simpson.
Oh, no way.
And it's a very it's a very similar sound. It's one of those kind of sounds where I have another buddy of mine who actually grew up with Tyler Childers, and they were very close friends growing up.
Oh, that's cool.
To the point that he always tells a story, they were supposed to hang out one day, and Tyler called him up and was like, hey, look, man, I can't hang out. I'm really sorry. I had every plan. He's like, it's all right, man. Is everything okay? He's like, yeah, I'm playing Jimmy Kimmel tonight.
That's so cool.
he's like, I get it. You're playing Jimmy Kimmel. It's okay.
Mm-hmm.
To could always do is, ooh, is that a Lamb of God jab? I know, can you do that?
Might be.
Could always do it sarcastically like Lamb of God. So I thought they were death metal like that. Tom will send me a text in a minute and tell me this whole entire dissertation about how they are. But so we got a lot of ways we can find you, brother. You are welcome back. I feel like there's so much, we've barely scratched the surface of what you've got going on. Cause you're into producing, you got the book, you're working on making that into something that'll hopefully become a movie. You're going to put me on the red carpet, make me absolutely famous, wealthy beyond my ever loving dreams. I mean, this is going to be amazing.
As long as we can buy waffles, we're good.
Okay. So we got to do this cause you're from Chicago. I've been to Chicago. I've had Chicago deep dish. Mm-hmm. I live in Albany, New York. I've had New York pizza. I've had all the little different thin slices. I've been to Naples, Italy, and had pizza.
Oh,
and you live out in California. You live out in California. Yes, Cooties. I like it too there, Anthony. It's so funny of a name, Cooties. Best pizza you've ever had. And when I tell you where the best pizza you'll ever have is, you're never going to believe me.
Honestly, the best pizza I've had is Giordano's in Chicago, which is like those big slices of cheese. It's like one slice is like that thick. That's the best one I've ever had. And I'm from there. Leona's was good too. Leona's on Sheffield in Chicago was really good. Hopefully they're still there.
I've been to Larisi's in Philadelphia. That's you know the song outside chilling at Larisi's summertime Will Smith.
No, I don't know that.
Summertime. When he says outside chilling at Larisi's, that's a pizza place. They have signs all throughout the inside of the place, and it says like don't ask for toppings, this, that, and the other bullshit because they don't do toppings. But the best pizza. Best you will ever have in the world. Antico Pizza, Atlanta, Georgia.
Really? Antico Pizza? Now I'm going to have to, next time I'm in Atlanta, I'm going to have to go there. Antico Pizza?
Antico Pizza in Atlanta, Georgia.
Could you email that me so I have that? So like, would bro, I go there I will, and film? I will totally
absolutely. I will actually send you a list. I was working for a railroad company that was in Atlanta. And was flying home, and the guy sitting next to me was an assistant district attorney for whatever county. I think it's DeKalb County for that area. And he was the assistant ADA or assistant DA. And we're talking. I was like, yeah, you know, I'm here. You know, just retired out of the Marine Corps. Got to find some place to eat. And we sat down, and he gave me, like, this whole list of all the best places in Atlanta to eat. Now, this list is about 7-8 years old at the time. But I'm going to tell you right now, that Antico Pizza, I looked it up recently, and that place is still exists and is still ranked as one of the top 10 places in the United States to get pizza by Travelocity.
Okay, I'm going to totally do that because we're supposed to be doing a film in Atlanta, actually. So if that works out, I'm going to totally go there.
Well, see, when you brought up waffles, I've eaten chicken and waffles at Gladys's. Gladys Knight's restaurant.
Oh, no, where's that?
That's in Atlanta.
I guess downtown. I have to move them home.
Dude, it's downtown, and the shit's unreal good. But yeah, like I've got a whole list. I'll send you the list. I'll text it to you here in a little bit.
Please. Oh, my God. Thank you. I love food.
Bro, like there's a fat kid that lives in my soul. in Atlanta. Have you ever had a scotch egg?
No.
What do you know what that is? No. See, people – somebody – was it last episode or somebody else? Somebody else was like, that's not real. A scotch egg is a hard-boiled egg. Wrapped in sausage and then deep fried.
Oh my God. I thought it was like a when the way you described that, you take an egg and chuck it into a glass of like you know, malt liquor and like shoot.
No. Yeah, scotch egg is amazing. And they also have, and I just looked it up today, I was talking to somebody. They have six of these in Atlanta. You know what Chick-fil-A is, right?
Yeah.
They have six restaurants in Atlanta called Chick-fil-A Dwarf House. They're only in the Atlanta area. So they're sit-down Chick-fil-A restaurants with like a waitress and everything. But they serve burgers.
Like meat, like a beef burgers? Or
yeah. Yes. See, look, your sister's awesome. Your sister said, scotch eggs. Your sister's awesome. She knows what they are. But yeah, like, bro, I'm telling you right now. And that's where I had one of my buddy and I, Terrell, had one of the most glorious things ever, which was sweet potato souffle, like warm sweet potato souffle with a scoop of vanilla ice cream on top of it.
How does that taste?
Well, you got like this sweet potato souffle that has marshmallows and brown sugar and all that in it. Like a pie almost, like a pie filling, and then throw a scoop of cold ice cream on top of that.
I'd have to like actually try that at some point in time, but yeah.
This is all you get. Oh, it's so glorious. I don't know. We're drifting off, folks. We got to talking because I like, you know what I liked in Chicago was you guys have like some of the best Polish delis I've ever been to.
Yeah, our city was mostly like a lot of Polish people lived there. I've met three Polish people since I've lived in California. Three. But they're all, the rest of them are in Chicago. Yeah.
Are you a vegan?
My mostly vegan food, yeah.
Wait, hold on. You can't. So are you a vegan or are you vegetarian?
Well, I was vegan for 6 years and then I had to go overseas to work for a while. You can't. There's no way in the areas that I was at you'd have to eat salads the whole time, and there's no way you could do that. So yeah, I've been eating vegan food for like a long time.
Are you back to it? My daughter's a vegan.
Yeah.
I have one daughter who's a vegan and one daughter who's a vegetarian.
Yeah, because I was at the tipping point. I don't know if I told anybody, but I was at the tipping point of having diabetes. And I was like, what? So my doctor said, if you don't change your diet and start losing weight, you're going to once you have that, you're screwed. You have to, they're going to change on your driver's license and everything too. I'm like, okay, what do you do to fix this? And they said, start eating more vegetables. I'm like, I fucking hate salads. So then one of my friends said, try eating vegan food. I'm like, yeah, I tried that like about 15 years ago and it was disgusting. And there's no way. But then I started discovering there were actually a lot of vegan options, especially live in LA. You can get anything you want vegan, like breakfast burritos and everything too. So yeah, I started eating that, and then I started losing all the weight pretty quickly, and you can get all the comfort foods and everything too. So I've been eating, that's what I've been doing mostly. So there was, it's really easy to do here in Los Angeles. If you go overseas to Bulgaria and stuff like that, it's not quite easy to do.
It's not a thing.
Yeah, you have to do vegetarian stuff or you'll die. So here in LA, it's really easy to do too. Yeah, my whole freezer is packed with vegan meats and everything too. I've got vegan Polish dogs. There's a company called Beyond Meat that makes the big vegan Polish meat. So yeah, I just eat that all the time too. And rice, I guess you brown rice and stuff too. It's actually much better too. I've noticed when I did that, all my sugar levels dropped. And so I just had to cut all that stuff out too because I was starting to have these weird things. When I was driving one night, my vision was changing. I just got a brighter pair of glasses. I'm like, why do my glasses feel like they're getting kind of weird? And that's one of the signs you're tipping over to the diabetic range, is when your vision starts getting weaker.
Oh shit.
So I can't have that because I don't want to, I just can't do it. There's no way. So I had to cut all that stuff out. So it was challenging at first. It's almost when you're I quit drinking alcohol 13 years ago. And, I basically quit cold turkey and you had to slowly keep having a little bit less and less over the course of a month until you weed it out of your system. But I was shaking a lot. You're this the whole time when you wake up in the morning.
Oh, you were a straight alcoholic.
I was going nuts. Yeah. Wow. It was a mess.
Bro, you a whole lot of good story to you. You know that, right?
Thanks. Yeah. I'm surprised I'm still alive. I mean, especially after the last week with the car accident and everything.
Well, that's a whole other animal.
Yeah, I was partying too much. I was treating my body like an amusement park. So once, you can only, if you're doing that when you're young, great. When you get a little bit older, it's, you guys are really watching that stuff because you're fuck, man. So it sucks though. Not you have to moderate things. So my friend Brian Manowitz is the vegan black metal chef. He's a good friend of mine. He told me you can actually get Snickers bars that taste like a Snickers bar, but it's actually a vegan Snickers bar. I'm like, really? And then I went to the store and I bought them. That tastes pretty good. So you can totally equate that balance between that pretty easily. It's not that hard. You just have to make the effort to do it. And it's not that expensive, really. You just have to just be smart about how you shop. Trader Joe's has good options. And
that Trader Joe's thing, that became that's cultish.
Yeah.
Trader Joe's is cultish. I only buy Trader Joe's. Fuck it.
Oh, I'd never do that. There's other stores that have good stuff too. But I like their stuff, and they also have, the thing is, don't ever go in their parking lots. You'll never get out.
Oh, it's bad here in Albany. Yeah. We're gonna get ready to wrap this thing up, brother man. I don't mean to cut you off. We're gonna get ready to wrap it up. So tell us where. Tell some folks we've got clanofthevein.com, mm-hmm. and that's Vein VEIN.
Yes, all just right. Scrolling down below.
It's scrolling across the bottom of the screen. For those of you that listen to the audio, at clanofthevein.com, you can get the book. You download it. Support Neil's vegan habits so he can get a little bit of lettuce, maybe a Beyond Burger. We're going to support that habit. Good, healthy living. What else you got? Bro, now, let's see if I can do this right. And I wore this shirt for Neil. And Neil knows why I wore this shirt.
Right. Sadly, I can't say anything until the movie comes out.
We can't say anything. But I'm wearing my James Bond Moonraker shirt. And I love this. And this is for Neil. And I want to just go ahead and put it out like that. And I can't say why. I've been sworn to secrecy. But just understand that I'm wearing a James Bond Moonraker shirt today. Was that incognito enough? Did I keep it safe enough?
Yeah, pretty much. So, like,
like I'm safe enough for you.
Yeah, just keep the James Bond thing.
But that's what this shirt is. It's a shirt.
Yeah.
Like I'm wearing that shirt right now, Roger Moore. Mm-hmm. Like I'm not. That's what I'm wearing.
Mm-hmm. My mom was his assistant when he was working on the Saint TV show.
Oh, the Saint! Great. I know the Saint.
My mom was Roger Moore's assistant on that show when she lived in England. She was his assistant, his personal assistant. Yeah.
So
isn't that crazy?
Stories.
So it's funny that you're wearing that.
Is your mom Moneypenny?
I wish. She's better. She's super cool. I love my mom.
Like your mom would be super cool.
She's my best friend. I come every day, no matter where I am in the world. She always gets a call from me. If she doesn't, she knows something bad happened.
That's so awesome. So we've got all these things going on. Any movies or anything? I mean, we know we got the storyboard. You did the storyboard for the Hitman's Bodyguard's Wife. That's such a long title.
Yeah, Hitman's Wife's Bodyguard. Yeah.
The Hitman's Wife's Bodyguard. We know you did that. Anything else, you know, you've got coming up? Any other things where we could maybe see you?
Yeah, I mean, if you look at my Instagram page, it's instagram.com, and I think it's Neil DeMonte,
Clan of the Vein.
It's instagram.com/Clan of the Vein, which is, it's mostly geared towards our comic book property, but I have some personal stuff on there too, quite a bit. It's my personal page also. And I'm on Twitter. You can find me at twitter.com/Neil DeMonte. And I'm a big Rush fan, so I'm always doing something with Rush on there all the time. If you're a Rush fan too. And I'm also on Facebook at Neil.DeMonte. And we also have a Clan of the Vein Facebook page too. And you can also check out our stuff at the Clan of the Vein website too, which we're updating right now too, to have more stuff on there too. But because of the pandemic, we were not really doing that. But now we're going to be updating again with new events coming up and press and everything too. And like I said, based on his T-shirt that he's wearing, you'll be hearing about that too in the next couple of weeks. That's all I can say.
We'll post something once Neil gives me the thumbs up. You know, and we'll cue it right on up for everybody to check out. You know, we'll get the money, we'll drop our pennies on it, and we'll cue that right on up.
Thank you so much. It's such fun. It's had so much fun doing your show too. You're very charming. Appreciate that.
Also, folks, for us, we have our Instagram is @theabovethebar. I know I ain't had that much. So we have our Instagram, which is @AboveTheBarPodcast, our Twitter, which is @AboveTheBar4, our email is theabovethebarpodcast@gmail.com. As always, anyone, this is your first time listening, please subscribe, 5-star, all the stars, tell everyone how wonderful I am. Follow us on all the different pages. We'll follow. I'm pretty good about following back when somebody follows me, unless you show up on my Instagram and it's obvious you've never posted anything. And it's just a picture of a half-clothed woman. I'm not going to follow you. I'm sorry. Unless it's Neil. If Neil's half-clothed, I'll follow Neil. We'll go.
I'm not wearing pants.
He's not wearing pants, and I know it. I was here before you were. So, Neil, we're going to get ready. We're going to get ready to close the bar up here. As always, as I tell everyone, once I turn the lights out on the bar, don't you go anywhere. We'll talk for a moment. Anything you've got for everyone, what's the last word from you?
From me or from?
From you. What's the last word from you?
Oh, well, thank you all for watching and thank you all for listening and thank you for inviting me to be on your show. I had a really wonderful time. And thank you all for being patient too, since considering what's been happening recently. I really appreciate all the support and love that I've been getting from everybody. So I appreciate that. Thank you.
All righty, folks. Be sure to push your stool in.
This has been an Earplug Podcast presentation. Found on earplugpodcast.com, iTunes, SoundCloud, and wherever your favorite podcasts are found.